All right, so welcome to the webinar. It's called Before You Take the LSAT. These are things that I wish I knew before I started even studying for the LSAT. I think hopefully that a lot of these things can save you a lot of time. I think they would have saved me a lot of time. Again, I'm doing this based on what I've learned in my process, and I hope that it applies to a lot of people, and a lot of it is also based on what I've learned from reading about what other people have gone through. So yeah, okay, let's get started. Who am I? I mentioned this, Doreen, and I studied really, really hard and went from 148 to 174. Who is this for? It's mainly directed towards people who are starting to study, but I do think that there are things in here that I would have appreciated even while I was a little bit further deep into my studies, but yeah. All right, okay, straight into the meat of this. The first thing I want to say is that the LSAT is the single most important factor in the law school admissions process. And I think, like, once you start studying for the LSAT, everywhere you go, you'll read this tip. And I think it's for a good reason, because it really cannot be understated, in my opinion, how important the LSAT is. And I'm going to give an example. I've been tutoring the LSAT for the past, like, over three years. And one of my students came to me after he had received his LSAT score already. He had already applied and he was waitlisted and he got into a few schools. And this was in Los Angeles. And he got into a few schools, but they were like below, you know, the top 50. And even though that's okay, like they were good schools especially for the area, but he came to me and talked to me and it's important to mention, he had almost a 4.0. And I told him if he studied for the LSAT, because his LSAT score originally was, I think, in the 150s. It was in the 150s. And I told him, if you study really hard and apply next year and continue working, because he was working in law at the time. I was like, if you continue working, he was working while he was in school, and he would have been taking a gap year if he waited. And I told him if he continued working and applied again, he had really good chances for really great schools. And so he ended up applying again, studying really hard for the LSAT. I helped him a little bit with that. And he ended up scoring in the 160s. And he is now the first year at University of Pennsylvania. So, and that's just one example. But it really, really, like, it's not that GPA, your personal statement, your letters of recommendation don't matter. The GPA and the LSAT are the most important. And it really also depends on schools. Like, I know at Columbia, they care a lot more about your LSAT than some other schools even do. They focus more on it, and they look more at work experience. There are certain profiles that schools will look at. But the point is, the LSAT is the single most important factor in the law school admissions process. And if you have a high GPA especially, I feel like it's even more important, because you have really high, there are really good schools that you can get into if you work on the LSAT. Okay, I think we talked about that enough. Get to the second point. So the second thing, another lesson learned, is that the LSAT is a difficult but very, very learnable test. And basically, just to expand on that a little bit, is the LSAT is a standardized test. And standardized tests, as much as the LSAC, the creators of the LSAT, wouldn't want it, there are patterns. So the way I think about it, when you study for the LSAT, you're picking up a lot of patterns. And that's how I felt as I studied more and more prep tests. And the more I studied prep tests, the more patterns I picked up. And I think that for me, one of the things that helped me get a high score was being able to recognize the patterns very quickly and almost not having to work through the questions. Like, I didn't really have to think about it as much, because sometimes I recognized a pattern that I had seen before and I could just, you know, I could just use the knowledge that I had from doing this type of question before and go through that question in half the time. So, like, let's say the question usually should take 30 to 45 seconds, like maximum a minute. Sometimes it would take me 15 to 30 seconds, just because I had seen that type of question so many times. And just to expand out on that a little bit more, right now there are currently over 80 real practice tests, which means these are tests that have been administered before and people have taken them. And those tests are the best way to start picking up those patterns and to work on your score, like increase your score. Okay, number three. So a few of you mentioned that you're studying and you have like 5 months or a year. And I really, I personally am a strong believer that you really do need a lot of time to study for this exam. I think a lot of like prep companies, they try to tell you that 3 months is good. And in my opinion, I think that they're saying that because it's the most beneficial for them. The least amount of time they say you need is the least is how much time they'll give you in their course, and they can charge you the same amount of money or whatever. So I would just say you don't have to necessarily agree, but I would say to be skeptical and remember which sources are telling you that 3 months is enough. And I don't mean to say that 3 months is not enough for everyone. I met a student at Harvard and he studied for 1 month, but he also started at a diagnostic that I believe was over 170. So I really recommend keeping that in mind. It's, you know, you don't necessarily need more than 3 months, but I do think that the majority of people do. And I definitely did. And if I were to give like a certain time frame that I recommend, I would say 6 months is a good amount of time. Okay, and to expand on that, I guess, or to follow that, I really recommend working backwards. And I know this works for any goal, really. So I would say take the time to figure out what your target schools are, where you fall in terms of their average GPA, and even more importantly, their LSAT. So schools give you the 25th, the 50th, and 75th percentile for their admitted class and for their entering class for the previous year. And a good rule of thumb, at least when I was applying, is, and it, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, is to, if you're above the 50th percentile on both the GPA and the LSAT, you usually have a pretty good chance. And if you're above the 75th percentile for both the GPA and the LSAT, you have a really, really good chance. And just to give an example, like, let's say the school admitted, you know, the 50th percentile is a 3.5 GPA and a 162. So if you have a 164 and a 3.6, you're above the 50th percentile on both the GPA and the LSAT, you have a pretty good chance of being admitted to that school. And I don't usually talk about like too much about the application process itself, but I would recommend for anyone who's interested, when you are applying, make sure that you apply to both schools that are reach. So you might be below the GPA or the LSAT or both. Not only applying to those that are reach, but apply obviously to the ones that are safe, which is the ones where you're above the 50th percentile. I'm going to talk about this actually more at the end. So if you are able to stay for the end, I'm going to show you exactly how this works for me. And I really think that there was one thing that I did that if I had not done, I don't think that I would have gotten the score that I got. Okay, number five. Oh, one more thing about number four really quick. Keep in mind rolling admissions. It really, really pays to apply early for law school. And I know that there are a lot of websites that talk about rolling admissions, but I think also this one cannot be overstated. You want to be able to give yourself time to retake the LSAT just in case. So I think the ideal timeline is to be able to take the June LSAT before the fall where you'll be applying. So your application process would be starting a year, well over a year before you'd actually be starting law school. So you take the June LSAT, for you to take the June LSAT, you'd have to start maybe like 6 months in advance, take the June LSAT. Hopefully you do fine, but if you wanted to retake, you have September, and then you can apply in September, October. So yeah. Remember your why and have it written down somewhere. So a lot of you asked me about how to stay motivated, and I had a very specific thing that kept me motivated. I think the typical things are you have your, you have a dream school or you have a dream job, and certain schools will provide you opportunities for certain jobs that other schools won't. So for example, if you want to work in big law, you have typically want to go to a top 14 school, or you have to be at the very, very top of your class, which is very stressful, but there's the option, you know? But yeah, so scholarships, your dream school, dream job. There was one thing in particular that I want to mention that worked for me. And it might sound weird or random, but it was very helpful. So while I was studying, there was a study that came out. It was a research study that was done at UC Berkeley. And it talked about how people who had studied for the LSAT, yeah, pull it up. This is the study, and the source is down there. If anyone's interested, I could send it to you. And it says, intensive preparation for the law school admissions test actually changes the microscopic structure of the brain, physically bolstering the connections between areas of the brain important for reasoning, according to neuroscientists at the University of California, Berkeley. So basically, what they did was they studied people, college students and recent graduates, 24 college students and recent graduates, before and after 100 hours of LSAT training over a three-month period, and they actually saw changes in their brain. And for me, having something that went beyond just, I'm applying for law school and I need to take this test, which can be a little bit of a drag sometimes, the fact that you can actually change your brain was really motivating for me. For me, I was like, okay, if I can actually get myself to become a little bit smarter by studying hard for this test, why wouldn't I? I have to study for it anyway. There are many other reasons to also be studying for it, but this was just an extra one that was very motivating for me. Okay, number six, you absolutely do not have to take a prep course. I mentioned this, and a lot of the reason why I mentioned this is because I fell in that trap where I felt like I have to take a prep course because everybody else was doing it. And I knew someone who had done really well and she had taken a prep course. But I really want everyone to know that you do not have to take a prep course in order to do well on this. A lot of improving your score on the LSAT comes through self-studying, in my opinion. That's how I feel like that's how I improved a lot of my score with self-studying. I did a little bit of tutoring as well, but a lot of it was self-studying, teaching myself. And I really think that it's not something that everyone needs to do. So not only did I feel like the prep course was not super helpful, I felt, if anything, in some ways it actually went the opposite direction. They gave me bad advice. They told me the prep course started like just barely over 2 months before our LSAT and the exam date, and they told me not to start studying before the prep course, which I know now is really, really bad advice. You shouldn't wait to start studying for the LSAT unless it's like over a year, but I wouldn't wait. I don't think that's a good idea, especially if it's only 2 months out. Anyways, okay, I'm just gonna give my take on prep course. You really do not have to agree with this. I just wanna provide a perspective that I would have found useful when I was, you know, debating, should I take a prep course, should I spend however much, I don't remember even, it was over 1,000. So here are my thoughts. So first of all, there are different levels of people who are in the prep course. So they do absolutely no vetting to see what level everyone's at least that was in my course, in the courses I know about. Everyone is thrown together in a single class without any thought given to the strengths and weaknesses of the people in the course. There's not much thought given to the diagnostic score and the bad advice, which I mentioned, where they told me, not only did they tell me not to start studying, they told me don't ever use any other prep strategies. I think for them, it was just that they didn't want me to start using something else and like it and maybe not use theirs anymore. But I actually think that there's a lot of value in studying from different prep companies and using different prep strategies. Especially for logic games, I found that I didn't find one prep course that provided everything. I kind of combined a few things and it really was a lot easier for me that way. So don't be afraid to do that, but also don't get overwhelmed. If you feel like you'd rather just stick to one thing, that's okay, but you don't have to. But yeah, picking and choosing the best aspect of each one to figure out what worked best for me was the strategy that worked for me. The other thing is, and this is a little bit more technical and specific, and hopefully you guys who have been studying, it'll be more helpful to you. Read the stimulus before you read the question stem. That's what we were told, and I don't want to mention the name of the prep course, but that's what we were told, and I absolutely disagree. I think giving that advice is like saying your professor is willing to tell you if your exam is short answer or essay or multiple choice, and you're saying, it's okay, I'd rather not know. So when you're doing logical reasoning questions, I absolutely recommend starting by reading the question stem so that you know how to read the question. Do you have to look for a gap? Are you just looking at the argument structure? So I don't want to go into that much more than that. Unless you have questions, I will get to it at the end. And just to expand on this a little bit more, really do your research on the LSAT prep courses versus the books versus the online resources. And the last thing I do want to say is that I did not give this advice to anyone, to anybody who asked me for advice in the beginning especially, because I didn't want my one bad experience to affect other people. But I've had multiple people tell me that the prep course has not helped them, and they really didn't find a value. So that's the only reason I feel more comfortable giving this advice. But just keep an open mind. Maybe you agree or disagree, but keep an open mind and talk to people and see if they actually found a value. People who've already taken it, not people who are thinking about taking it. It's okay, number seven, it's okay and often worth it to retake the LSAT. Schools are really looking at your highest score. It really, I think a lot of people stress out over this, and it's really not worth stressing over so much. And that's one of the reasons I think I wasn't too stressed when I went into the test day, because you really can take it again. And so I don't want to get into that too much, but it's the same LSAT you've seen when you take prep tests. And if you approach it properly, your testing conditions should be easier than whatever testing conditions you put yourself through when you're studying. Okay, number eight, and I think this one's really important. Taking prep tests is almost the most important aspect of studying. And the reason why I say it's almost, prep tests are the most important aspect of studying, in my opinion. And that's one of the things I promised I would talk about in this webinar. But I think the actual single most important aspect of your study is reviewing your practice test. And not just reviewing your practice test, but reviewing it before you score it, before you read about that particular practice test online. You should go into it completely blind, as in you don't know anything about that prep test. You take the prep test. You don't score it, you don't do anything. As you're taking your prep test, you circle things that you kind of sorted, you're not 100% sure about. And then after you take it timed, you go through it untimed, look at the questions you're not sure about, mark the answer that you would have chosen if you had unlimited time, and then you score it. And you see how you did timed versus untimed. And timed gives you an idea of how you do under, obviously under like more testing conditions, and untimed shows you how good your strategy is and your intuition. Okay, and the other thing I would say is that don't rush through your prep tests. Each one of them are really valuable, and it's much better to take your time going through prep tests and really analyzing each answer choice and making sure you know why each one is right or wrong than to take a bunch of prep tests. I think a lot of people do that. They think you just have to take as many prep tests as possible. And another thing is to take the prep test in conditions similar to or more difficult than test day. This means taking five sections to account for the experimental section you're going to see on test day, or more if you want to challenge yourself, but don't do more too often. Like maybe just do that once or twice just to build your stamina. Don't take arbitrary breaks that you won't get on test day. There's a lot of information about how the test is structured, and it's really important to keep that structure. The third thing is to print out and use a Scantron when you're taking the test. I can put a link for that if anyone's interested. And those extra few minutes it takes to fill out the Scantron really make a difference. Or they can make a difference. You know, it's just better to keep the testing conditions similar to what the test day will look like. And the last thing is don't use noise canceling headphones, or otherwise put yourself in a situation in a room where there's absolutely no noise. There's no guarantee that your testing location will be silent, and chances are more than likely that you'll be in a room filled with other test takers who may be coughing, shuffling their papers, fidgeting, etc. So it's important to prepare yourself for these situations by taking the test in libraries and also noisy settings, like maybe a coffee shop or something. You know, maybe not all the time, but just trying it out. Just, it's better to prepare yourself for the worst. Okay, so this one is the most important thing to know before you actually sign up for the test. Do your research into the local testing centers before you sign up for the test. Each testing center has a different atmosphere in terms of parking, noise level, desk size. And I know that might sound trivial, but it's anything but trivial when you have a desk that barely fits both your Scantron and test booklet. And there's actually information about this online, so I recommend looking into it online. But you can also talk to people who live in your area who might have taken the test. And these really simple factors can make a difference on test day, and they can serve as distractions. So, and also, this one's also very important, but maybe a little premature for some of you. On this note, I'd recommend visiting your testing center before the day of the test to get a sense of what the parking situation is like, the noise level, although obviously it could be very different than your actual test day, and more importantly, what the room slash desk situation is like. And the last thing is that the LSAT is a mental, psychological, and physical test. So prepare yourself accordingly. I think just taking the time to work out, eat healthy, taking care of your psychological health, you know, making sure that you still have a life outside of the LSAT. I think it's really important to take, in my opinion, it's nice to take just one day off every week if you're studying full time. Take one day off where you do the things that you enjoy so that when you go back to studying, you can focus on it fully. And that one day you take off, I actually think it helps you process the things you've learned and maybe reflect and make connections that you wouldn't make if you're just forcing yourself through all the time. And this is the last thing for this one. So don't psych yourself out on the day of the test. A lot of you guys are worried about this, so I'm going to talk about a few things that I did. First one is one thing I mentioned, visiting the test center. I knew what my testing center looked like. I knew what the parking situation was. I knew what route I'd take. I knew where the nearest Starbucks was. So I wasn't stressed out about that. The next thing is to realize that your real test is just another practice test for someone else, just like the practice test you took were someone else's real test. I talked about that, so I'm not going to say much more about that. The next thing is some people will get motivated by this, by using this mindset, but keep in mind that the LSAC, the writers of the test, they want you to be thrown off. So all these patterns that we take the time to learn, I think they're very helpful, like knowing that there are different types of games, but it's important to know that they also, they know that you know that there are certain patterns that have shown up on previous exams, and they'll try to throw you off by changing up the style for the following exams. So I would say to use the patterns to more loosely guide your thinking than to think that that's how it's definitely going to be. I guess I have two more things to say about that. Don't let other people's attitude at this testing center affect you. It's not about them, it's about you. This is your test. It really doesn't matter if they seem super happy or whatever it is. Just focus on yourself. And on that note, if you're completely focused on the day of the test, the noises other people will make should not distract you. And that's something you can work on as you're studying to make sure that you don't get distracted by anybody else's noise or actions or whatever it is. So if there are any questions, I'm going to start. There is one more thing I want to show you, but I might wait towards the end of the seminar or the webinar, sorry, to show you that.
Let me go back and see what the questions are. Okay, how do you manage expectations and remembering your why while studying? Some peers have been telling me to wait for the score before considering where I could get in. Okay, so the way I think about it is you kind of should have a pretty good idea of what your score is going in. Like, it's not a good sign if you don't know what score you're gonna get in when you're going into the actual exam, because the practice tests give you a really good idea of what to expect and how you're gonna score. And if you take the practice test in testing conditions that are similar to the real test and even more difficult, like I really do strongly recommend that. I'm sure you've heard me say it a few times now. If you do it in situations where it's a little bit more difficult, you're really putting yourself in a good place, and you should have a good idea. Like, I don't recommend, like, for example, when I took practice tests, I never put in guess answers and included that as part of my score. Okay, for remembering your why, I mean, if you know what your GPA is, that kind of helps you see where you land, but the LSAT makes a huge difference. So I hope I answered your question, but if I didn't, let me know what else you would want me to talk about for that. But I don't necessarily agree with your peers that you have to wait for your scores. I'm glad you like the study, son of a pupululu. Yeah, definitely. Okay. I think it does help having goals and dreams does help getting a better score. Would it be a good idea to take a prep course after a couple of months of self-study? So I usually don't have super strong opinions about things, like super, super strong. But if there's one thing that I don't like, it's prep courses. But really, it's something you should explore for yourself. Talk to your friends. Talk to people you know who've done well. It really helps more to talk to people who have already done it than people who are doing it, because they might think it's great, but then they're not happy with their final score. So I don't think so. I think maybe some of the online courses, but I don't know. The ones that I've heard about, the prep courses that exist now, I personally don't love them. And those are the big names. So, and on that note, because I don't want to forget, and I didn't mention it in the slides, the big names in test preparation for a lot of other standardized tests, like the SAT and those types of things, are not necessarily the prep test companies that you want to use for the LSAT, because usually it's companies that focus primarily on the LSAT because there are so many strategies that you need to know. A lot of the companies who are actually provide good material are ones who focus primarily on the LSAT, or at least have done a lot of research on the LSAT. Okay, let's see. How many prep tests do you recommend we take before test day? Okay, so if you are able to do it properly, like you're able to take the time to really, really, really go through the prep tests, I would say between 15 and 20 is a good place. And I don't mean like that's all you ever see, but in terms of the prep test that you go through in detail and you review, and I mean the prep test that you take under timed conditions, like a real prep test, I would say 15 to 20. But when you're studying for the LSAT, I think it really helps to do like sections and time sections, untimed sections. So you're probably going to come across more than 15 to 20, but just in terms of practice tests that you take under time conditions, under testing conditions, I would say 15 to 20 is usually a good place. Okay, Darcy, full-time job. Yes. So it's really, really hard to balance that, I think, having a full-time job and studying. It depends on how you work also. I think a lot of it is if you're able to study before work, usually it's you're more fresh, you're able to study better. If you can use your weekends to study, you know, it's really hard. I think you need a lot more time if you are studying and working at the same time. How do you stay motivated while working? If you know what your goal is, if you know what you're working towards, I mean, the law school you go to can really change the direction of your life. I feel it being here at the school at Columbia. I really think it changed my life. So I would just keep that in mind. Kind of have a vision of where you want your life to go. This might be a lot, but like, you know, have an idea of where you want your life to go and see how the LSAT. But if you're able to take time off from work, or if you're a student and you were able to take time off from, you know, it's like summer and you can focus on it, that's obviously very ideal. I ultimately was able to take a month off from work, and because I knew that I didn't want to stay working where I was. I was very, very motivated to move on to the next level, start grad school. And so I was able to take a month off from work. I wanted zero distractions. So I actually ended up, I went to stay with a friend who was very, very, she was very supportive. And like, when I told you guys about the mental, psychological, physical, like I really honestly did that. And I really, really believe that. You know, I signed up for a Groupon for Pilates. I went like 3 times a week. I made sure I ate well and healthy. And my friend was just, she was super, super supportive. And I really think it made all the difference. Like, she really believed in me and she knew that I could, like, she believed that I could do well. So it's little things like that, and it's the things that you hear all the time, but it makes a difference. Do you recommend focusing on one section at a time for study, or do you recommend studying all sections at once? So I have strong opinions about this one. I think it's really good it also depends on how you work, but I like focusing on one section at a time. I recommend starting with logical reasoning because I think it's a foundation for all the other sections, and it's also 50% of the exam, right? So there's 2 logical reasoning sections, 1 reading comp and 1 logic games. And, you know, knocking down those 2 out of 4 sections, you have 50% of the test down, and you also set yourself up with a solid foundation for the rest of the test. Let me know if you have any other questions about that. Frankie, I don't agree with your friends who are telling you to focus solely on the logic games. If you want, you can start with that, but I think it's a good idea I mentioned, but starting with logical reasoning, and then you can choose logic games and reading comp or one or the other, but I would say do not just focus on logic games, unless you can hit your target score by improving your logic games to where you want it to be, but yeah. Okay, awesome, cool. How many practice tests have you reviewed in total? Did you look at all 80? There weren't even 80 when I took the test. Let's see. And with this cherry picking. So the tests have changed over time. I think if you focus on the later tests for your actual practice tests, for your like timed tests, the ones that you take under testing conditions, those will give you a good idea of how you're going to score on test day. But the older tests, I used it to kind of pick up like patterns and kind of introduce me a little bit more to what the test looked like. Let's see. I think Son of Apulupulu. I'm going to address it by answering Darcy's question too. Reviewing older or newer prep tests? So the way I think about it is when you start studying, you want to use like old. Okay, so I break down the prep tests into 3 sections in my mind. There's like 1 through 40 or like 50, and there's like 1 through 40, then 40 through about 60, and then 60 plus. Yay, I'm glad. Okay, so 1 through 40, I was responding to the comment, by the way. I would use 1 through 40 just for getting yourself acquainted with the test, like you know how this test works, how the writers of the test think about things, and just know that the old tests are not necessarily representative of how the new tests look like. There are some similarities. I think reading comp has gotten a lot harder. Logical reasoning, I think it's a little similar. And the games used to be harder in the old prep test. They got easier, and now they're going back to the way it was in the first 40 or so prep tests. So they're still useful. And it's good because you want to keep in mind that you want to keep some prep tests just in case. Like, hopefully you don't have to, but in case you have to retake the LSAT, you want to keep in mind. Bye, Kay. Yes, hopefully. I will keep in touch via email after this. But anyway, so you want to keep one through 40 just to get acquainted with the test, and you don't have to do all of 1 through 40. It's kind of helpful to do 1 through 40 as like types of questions, and then 40 through 50 or 60 you do as timed sections or untimed sections, and then use the more recent tests as full practice exams. And you kind of just do it as sections, but as you go along, it's helpful to do some practice tests as you go along. So like every other week. And then as you get closer to the test, you take full tests every week. And then as you get even closer, you maybe want to take one every other day or something like that. I hope that answers your question, Darcy. Okay, Chantal, do you have any recommendations for attacking the reading comprehension section? Thank you. I appreciate that. The reading comprehension section. So I think, to be honest, I feel like there's not a lot of great advice out there. There's some, but it's not quite logical, like logical reasoning and logic games. And even for logic games, I felt like I had to combine a few different strategies to get it down. But for reading comp, I think the most helpful advice I read and that I utilize is don't think of it as types, you know, like the topics. Like a lot of test prep companies will break it down by topics. Like they'll say, oh, these are like the science passages and these are the law passages. And even though there are patterns between those, I think what's most helpful is thinking about reading comp in terms of structure. How is the passage structured? First of all, is it informative? Are they trying to persuade you or are they just trying to tell you? It really helps to realize like what is their intention? Because there's going to be questions. There's almost always at least one question about intention. What else? And then in terms of structure, how do they break down every paragraph? Like, is the first paragraph an introduction to a topic, and then the second paragraph is a point they're trying to make, and then the third paragraph is someone disagreeing with that point, and then the fourth paragraph is how they refute that argument. Like, it really helps to think about structure and not get lost in the details, because there will usually be like maybe one question, maybe more. There might be questions about details, but the point is that if you understand the structure very well, you'll know where to look at when you're looking for the details. Does anyone else have any other questions? I'm going to mention some of the questions people have asked me, and you guys can tell me if there's anything out of these that you want to answer. Just because we still have another 10, I can do another 10 minutes or so, or maybe like another 5 minutes answering questions. Let me see. People asked me, how did you approach studying? What did your study plan look like? What methods did you use? How did you deal with fluctuating scores? What were your weak sections? How did you improve those weaknesses? What keeps you motivated, which you kind of talked about? How do you break through a plateau? How to master logic games? Okay, people ask me that one. So I guess I should address that. I think logic games is a lot of like, there are types. I've mentioned that I don't think it's good to like 100% think that everything fits into a really nice category. It's helpful as a guideline, but not as a rule, you know? So it helps to break down logic games into those different types and just do them over and over. There are a lot of free resources online to approach logic games. So you can watch videos online after you do it yourself and see how somebody else approached it. But I would just say do it by type. Use the practice test 1 through 40 to go through them, master it, and then start doing the timed ones 40 through 60. And then, you know, by the time you get to the real, when you're actually trying to do a full practice test under time conditions, you should hopefully have it mastered. Let me think if there's anything else I want to say about that. All right, that's all I can think of right now. If I think of anything else, when I send a follow-up email, I'll mention that. Okay, I'm going to add, since there's no more questions right now, I'm going to show one more slide that I wanted to show. So let's do a screen share. And then, thank you, I appreciate it. I'm glad you enjoyed. Let's see. Okay, so this is, you guys all have my email address. I think everybody found me through my email address. But if you have any other questions, I also tutor. So if you're interested in tutoring, feel free to reach out to me. As I mentioned, I've been tutoring for over 3 years now, and I also do a little bit of admissions and consulting. So that's my email address. You guys all have it. I think that seems like that's it. Seems like there's no other questions. Thank you. Thank you guys for joining. I appreciate it. I hope this was helpful. And maybe we'll do this again in the future. Let me know. I'm curious to know what you guys found most helpful, or also maybe things you didn't find as helpful. You can let me know. Thank you, guys. So yeah, just feel free to message me, comment here, whatever. I'll check both. And yeah, maybe we'll do this again in the future. Let me know if you'd be interested in this again. Bye, guys. Have a great Sunday.
Hi, it's Doreen. Many of you who have listened to my podcast have asked for my email address or my contact info, so I just wanted to provide it. It is beforeyoutakethelsat@gmail.com. Again, that's beforeyoutakethelsat@gmail.com. Enjoy the podcast and feel free to let me know what you think.